listening to Show Me Your Mic, a show that interviews other podcasters about their workflows, gear, and thoughts on podcasting. Your host is Chris Enns, a podcaster who's hoping to learn more about the craft by talking to fellow broadcasters.
All right, hello and welcome to episode 20 of Show Me Your Mic. I am Chris Enns, and for the, double decade? I don't know what that is. Anyways, the 20th episode, I'm very special, super pumped to have him guest, Mr. Merlin Mann. Hello, Merlin.
Hi, Chris. How are you this morning?
I am well.
It's morning here. Is it morning there?
Yes, it's still morning, 11:23 as we record.
You guys have mornings in Canada, right? You put a U in it? I'm sorry. That's not it's super nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
Yes, and this has been a surreal sort of journey with this podcast because it's a podcast about podcasting, et cetera, very meta, all that stuff. But I keep sending invites to people to come on, and I get requests from people to come on, past guests, and they keep saying yes when I'm thinking eventually, you know, once I've done, I don't know what the number is, 50 or whatever, I feel like there should be a minimum Merlin level for Merlin to come onto your podcast or something like that. But anyways, I was surprised you said yes, and so I'm pleased. I just wasn't prepared for you to be on this early in the episode, but I'm glad it worked out for episode 20. So welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Well, you know, self-involved people who speak to the public a lot are sometimes very difficult to reach. Mm-hmm. You got to really tease them out of their shell.
Yeah.
Self-involved people, they just don't like talking.
So the for anybody who may not be familiar with what you do, I'm not going to do the Mike Hurley thing of making you describe it all, but where I know you from, 43folders.com was originally a site that I came across, and maybe it was MacBreak Weekly, one of the two, I forget which one came first, where you were on Leo's show and then also reading 43 Folders on productivity and all sorts of fun stuff there. And more recently, you're on a little show called Back to Work with Mr. Dan Benjamin over on 5x5. And you do another show with your buddy, John Roderick, Roderick on the Line, who I was just listening to actually as we, I forgot to turn it off as we started chatting earlier. So.
Is that what you were listening to?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to Hurley you. I've been doing stuff of one kind or another on the web, on the internet, because it used to be that to put up a web page, you would, you know, have to telnet in or FTP in, but yeah, since 1995 or six, and I've done a whole bunch of different stuff, but I think my blog Kung Fu Grip almost caught on in 2002. It had a small following of friends, but yeah, 43 Folders in 2004 was the first thing I was somewhat well known for. And then I did a podcast for that show. Right. And I think I was already doing that podcast. The first podcast I remember being a guest on was called Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte. And I guess it went well because Leo was kind enough to ask me to do more stuff. And so I ended up starting on, I forget which, but somewhere in like the first 10 or 20 episodes of MacBreak Weekly, I started becoming a regular, panelist, I guess. And pundit. Then we did, what was that?
Pundit or?
Oh, God. You hurt me, Chris.
Sorry.
Yeah, or, you know, this new technology is going to maybe be like this. I don't know.
We'll get into the iOS 7 discussion later again.
Oh, God, thank you. Yeah. It's so funny you should say that. I'm looking at your website right now, your weblogger blog, and I'm looking at your screenshots of iOS.
That's my punditry.
Mm-hmm.
As they say.
As they say. I did that for a while and took a break and came back. But yeah, I think the stuff that I that people may know from the more recent epoch is the show with Adam Lissagore and Scott Simpson called You Look Nice Today, which is I believe the genre is called Three White Guys Talking About Nothing. I started doing Back to Work with Dan Benjamin on 5x5 in 2011. And that same year, I started doing Roderick on the Line with John Roderick. And then, you know, I'm honored to do lots of guest appearances. And oddly enough, here I am talking about podcasts on a podcast about podcasting.
I know, it's very confusing.
it should be troubling, and yet I'm honored. So yeah, that's what I do. And I used to regard myself as more of a writer, and I'll probably start writing at some point in the next few months or so. I'll start writing stuff and more regularly. But yeah, it's mostly what I do. I really like doing it. It's easy. I just come into my office and talk, and so both of those are easy for me. And so it's kind of a good match for me.
It's in your wheelhouse, as they say.
As you say, yeah, my wheelhouse is filthy, but I try to keep my seat clear. I put a fresh sheet on it sometimes, swipe the dander away, and off I go to talk way too long, just like now. But yeah, and, so I enjoy podcasts. I listen to a fair number of podcasts as well.
Yeah, and we'll get before I end the show, we'll talk about some of the podcasts you listen to. And no, you have to actually tell me. I think I had Dan Benjamin on, and he didn't want to play favorites and didn't, but.
I'm happy to play favorites. Yeah. That's something I like to do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. I'll think about that.
Okay. So let's go back to, I guess, just the idea of podcasting. And we'll sort of speak generally, like you said, I love, you look nice today. I'm very sad it's ending or ended, or it is ended, right?
Like there's that it's in some kind of podcast hospice program right now.
Yeah.
You're really not sure how it's going, but you seem not well.
Well, that's the bane of, or most podcasts get to not, I know you guys have put a lot more thought into it, and it's not for lack of want, I think, with that show, but
it's actually incredibly simple, which is that we all really enjoy doing the show, but you know, the thing that distinguishes that, not to jump too far ahead, but I think the thing that distinguished that show, apart from the something like chemistry between the three of us and the personas that we developed on that show, but also that it's the first show I've been on a regular basis where, you know, there's the shows that you and I do where there's a minimum of editing. There are the shows, I look at something like what, Jason Snell, having been on The Incomparable a couple times, which is a show on 5x5 about all kinds of nerd, you know, pop culture nerd stuff, elves mostly, elves and Doctor Who from what I can gather. But having been on there twice and hearing the raw version and the edited version, you might not know that show is edited. He does such a splendid job of that. But then there's this other level that Adam, I think, has few peers, which is really shaping the entire episode through editing, down to moving parts around, having things more cogent. I don't know what the word would be, ducking or staggering the tracks so it doesn't sound like I'm constantly interrupting all the time, which is an art. And the truth is, though, he got real, Adam is also known as Lonely Sandwich, proprietor of Sandwich Video. And he, over the past something like 3 years, has gotten extremely busy to where he has like a staff and stuff now. So it's just really difficult because, you know, I think the truth can be told now that he would spend something like 5 to 12 hours editing an episode. So, you know, you have a kid and a business and that kind of thing. It's hard to find the time, but we have a final episode that'll come out at some point. That I think is pretty good, and I'm going to miss doing the show very, very much. It's one of my favorite things I've ever been involved with. It's almost impossible to explain to people who aren't, like, so much of what I do. It's hard to explain to somebody who's not already kind of a super fan, but I'm going to miss it a lot.
Yeah, and I think that's what, it speaks to Adam, in this case, Adam's ability as the editor on that show, and Jason, like you said, with Incomparable, I don't know, I can never... Anyway, it speaks to their abilities that they make it look so easy. Because you listen to You Look Nice Today and you're like, well, they just talked and had a few drinks, made some jokes. How hard would that be? Let's do a podcast like that. We can be as whatever popular or funny or all that kind of stuff. And not taking away anything from you and Scott, obviously, who are, you know, funny guys in your own rights. But the editing that he does makes the show what it is, I think, in terms of trimming and refining and knowing that, like, I'm lucky if I remember to put an intro and an outro on most of my shows and make it, you know, end properly, not just cut off randomly because I forgot to go check for some marker.
I think you're not alone there. I was talking to our friend Mike Hurley about this the other day, and he does something that I thought I was the only person that did this, but when I'll go through and try to find little blips. And I don't worry so much about coughs on Roderick on the Line, or there wouldn't even be a show. But, you know, the sound of me going to the bathroom or mixing a drink. And so I'll just watch for the spots. And this is one reason I'm thinking about moving to Logic. You're on a Mac?
I am, yeah.
And do you use GarageBand or Logic?
I use
what?
Logic Express back when they used to make Express.
But I gotta really, it's like Vim. I mean, I need to just sit down and learn it. I thought it was so confusing to learn, but he does that thing where it like automatically, I guess it's through by virtue of something like gate, but it'll knock out all the parts where there's silence, you know, and then he just goes through and like me flips, jump, you just jump to the section where there's some dialogue and see if anything needs to be done to that part. And the thing is, that's a great approach if you have a lot of work to do, but you do also like accidentally leave in really weird stuff if you don't go back and listen to the whole thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So like we'll just jump around. Like, so with Roderick on the line, it's just obviously you and John Roderick. And
I didn't mean to take you off if you're...
No, I don't have a... I have a rough schedule or a rough list of things to talk about, but I hold very loosely to that. That's my motto with questions, schedules, whatever. Life. Talk to my wife. But yeah, when you're editing that show, you record up presumably over Skype and like the rest of us peasants.
Right.
Us lowly folks down here. No, but you record on Skype and you're recording it into GarageBand. And does John send you his file and you're sort of matching it up, or you record both ends and away you go?
No, and it's neat. I've never actually gotten to talk about this. It's not super interesting, but yeah, you know, it's so interesting. Every show, not every show, but shows have different approaches to how they do this. And in this instance, Roderick on the Line is the only one, I'm not even going to say it, where I edit it. It's where it's my responsibility to take the assets, make a few decisions, and then put it out and post it. You know, with You Look Nice Today, that's, you know, mostly Adam and Claude's job. Obviously, with the 5x5 shows, he has dedicated editors for that, and I just do the show notes, which we can come back to because I think that's kind of an art form. But yeah, no, it's real simple. I mean, I do it in GarageBand, although I'm trying to figure out a better way to do it because I have to do some weird monkey work that I've never bothered to find out if there's an easier way to do. But no, I record everything. I call because John does not understand computers, and the things he does understand about computers perplex him. So I record both sides with call recorder, and I take that .mov and run it through their Apple script for splitting the two tracks. I drag the... Is this boring?
No, no. This is exactly what people tune into this show for. So
I mean, I don't know of a simpler process for what our show needs. And I you know, make a copy of the previous episode. If you have better ways to do this, I hope you'll tell me. I make a duplicate of the previous episode, change the episode number, and then I drag John's... I drag my track into a swim lane. I drag John's track in, start this at the beginning, and then go through and give it a listen, find a good spot at the end, figure out where to put the bell and the outro music, drag all of that over to where the theme music starts at the right point. And then, you know, sometimes I listen to the whole thing while I'm doing something else because it's easier to make the changes than go back and deal with it again. and then I just, you know, send it to iTunes, put in the necessary metadata, and upload it to Squarespace. So that's pretty easy. I used to do like a ridiculous amount of show notes for Roderick on the Line, but that ended up taking twice or three times as long as recording and editing the show, so I had to let that go. But now every episode of Roderick on the Line is looks really odd because it has a title that you probably can't understand. It's got a photo that almost certainly will make you curious, but doesn't tell you much. It's got a description that is simply the problem, colon, and then a phrase you don't understand. And if you took the time to mouse over the photo, you'd see that there's another line that makes absolutely no sense. So it's extremely difficult to get into the show on so many levels. But that process is, I you know, it's hard for me to think of an easier way to do that apart from putting up a raw file. I don't do that program everybody likes for equalizing levels. I've got levels satisfactory enough to my deaf ears, levels for each of the tracks for John and I. Used to be real bassy. Because I'm deaf now, I make it a little bit... I find a lot of podcasts too bassy because my hearing is poor. And that's really all there is to it. And because it's the same thing with two people every time, it works really well. The quality is good enough. If I remind John to plug in everything, you know, he Grubers his way through sometimes accidentally.
Yeah.
you know, you might remember that where John would forget to plug in his Ethernet pretty much every week on the talk show.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that was really rudimentary, but honestly, as little, I mean, and the thing is I could be done. And as you say, bouncing that down within 20 minutes after the show is over. So, you know, lately we've been recording at night. And so I'll hang out and do something else while it's doing that. And I'll put it up. That's the entire thing takes, you know, less than an hour for the production part. the longest part is the bouncing down and the uploading, really. And apart from that, sometimes I'll go through and edit stuff out. But I mean, when I say edit stuff out, like if there's just like a weird sound, like putting a coffee cup down, I'll take that out. But no, I like the fact that it's in there. If I tried to cut out John's snorts, the show would be like 6 minutes long.
Yeah, I mean, it's a few different directions to go there too, but it's a hilarious show. I think that folks, you need to give it. It's one of those things like what's a show? If you're Doctor Who, I guess to use one that you don't like.
No, it's not that I don't like it. Well, I'll say Buffy. This. I love you. I have there's a bunch of shows that I've tried to get my friends to watch just because we're comics, right? There's things that give me so much joy that I'm kind of compulsive about wanting other people to at least give it a try. It's really weird and self-involved. But like recently, I met somebody who hadn't seen Arrested Development, and I was about to go and recommend it. And then I thought, you know what? It really is an investment on a couple levels. On the one hand, you got to start with the first frame of the first episode, and you've really got to watch it. Because the humor comes out of these funny things that if you didn't notice it the first time, it won't seem funny when there's a callback to it later. Plus, there's those little, I don't know what you call it in the industry, like little, not flashbacks, but like cutaways. Mm. You know, like when Tobias says that he considers himself a cross between an analyst and a therapist, and they cut to his business card and it says, Tobias Funke, an analyripist. Which, if you think about that for a second, it looks like something very different. Mm-hmm. That's extremely funny, especially if you know Tobias's character. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. And the point being that it's difficult to say to people, this season that's on right now is really good, but it'll make a lot more sense if you at least watch the last episode of the previous season. But really, like The Wire, you kind of got to watch them all.
Yeah.
So with our show, I struggle with that because I would like more people to hear our show, but I mean, apart from saying, here's the episodes that I enjoy and other people seem to enjoy, there's not really a way to go, now I understand it.
And that's, I think, something that's unique to, unique to podcasts that, I'm trying to think now how to phrase this best, but your shows that you are involved with, like Roderick on the Line, You Look Nice Today, certainly could fall into there, although it does have its own standalone episodes that are, you can, you know, pop in and listen to and enjoy, certainly. But there is a bit of an investment to them, and that's something that's different than what a lot of podcasts tend to be, sort of the sitcom TV variety where each show is its own little thing. There's no, you don't want to risk either offending or alienating somebody by referencing old stuff and that kind of idea. And that's certainly an art and that you guys have together, you and John in this case, but also the fact that say on Back to Work, something where, you know, using bits that are reoccurring both for audience, rewarding audience loyalty.
Back to Work has at this point come to consist almost exclusively of either really intellectually elusive callbacks to pop culture in our own show, but also even the aspects of Dan and my relationship where I might stutter a little bit and then go, that's a funny bit. That's such a stupid thing, but that'll be funny to somebody who listens to the show a lot, and to everybody else, it just sounds like I'm mad.
Yeah.
But you know, this is something I have thought about in the past. Once I'm doing the show, I don't think about this, but
yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Sorry, idea of like knowing a bit is a bit and doing it, and then knowing when to kill that bit, let's say, because I think a lot of podcasters, it's something that builds up like I'm rewarded by listening to Back to Work and recognizing that bit. And whereas my mom, if my mom listened to it, she'd be like, what are these two losers talking about or whatever. But
who listens to this?
Yeah. Well, she says the same thing about my shows. Like people listen to, she listened to one of my shows actually and she fell asleep.
That is so sweet.
Which is such a nice thing for my mom to do. But yeah, like knowing when to kill a bit, so you're not over, like, people are like, oh, here we go again. Dan and Merlin are talking about the thing and the whiz-bang and the whatever. But because it doesn't go on forever, but what's the life of a, not to get too.
I'm happy to answer it. And I guess I should act like the answer is more complicated than it is. Philosophically, I promise I won't go on about this, but philosophically, it's a real value to me to make something that I like and that will appeal to the people that I like most of the time. I think it's a dead end to overthink how much what you're doing will appeal to people. That's a whole other topic that I've talked about ad nauseum, but I really do believe that. The day that I start sweating that too much is the day that what I do loses whatever tiny bit of value it has, which is the only thing I have to offer is who I am, how I think, and how I communicate, and which sounds really self-involved, but isn't it a pity that more people don't trust that in themselves? Which leads to the more salient point that I think you're making, which is that I think what you're saying is, you know, as you say, most shows are like in comics, you would call it like a one-off, or you would call it like a single issue story. It's not an overarching story arc where you have to read, you know, 50 comics. And that's great. I happen to really enjoy a comic that, especially if it's a series I've never read, I do seek out one where I can like, oh, just give me a sense of the characters and what's going on. But what you're describing, most podcasts for probably pretty good and sometimes pretty obvious reasons are topical podcasts. Many that are topical podcasts are about something that happened this week or last week. And the entirely mercantile and mercantile is the wrong word, but I want a show that has longevity. In other words, I don't feel great doing a show where it's almost like a loaf of bread where the value of it will seem very high when you pick it up and then will seem pretty much inconsequential in a week and a half. Why? Because you either will have eaten the bread and be ready for another loaf, or it'll just go bad and you certainly wouldn't want to eat it. And so yeah, I would encourage people to ask themselves when they do a topical podcast, how many people who've never heard your show are going to go listen to speculation about the release of iOS 5? Because that might be interesting for historical purposes, but only if you love the hosts. Like, I'll go back and listen to old episodes of The Talk Show with Dan and Dan Benjamin and John Gruber because it's one of my favorite things ever. But I'm listening for their bizarre interactions and strange silences and James Bond discussion. But I personally could give a flying fig what's happening in the world of technology. I think it's just one of the hugest and most... It's like football for nerds. Like, who cares, personally? But to this end, like, there's no reason that... if you go back and listen to the first episode of You Look Nice Today, you go back and listen to the first episode of Roderick Online or Back to Work, to varying degrees, you know, if you're the kind of person who would like that show, you'll like it just as much today as you did then. If you go back and listen to the first episode of a show about computers, I don't know. That's funny for historic value. It's like watching an old TV show to see how funny someone's hair is. But how many of us put the evening news on our TiVo and return to two-week-old episodes? Very, very few. Because as much as you love that show, there's really nothing there for you at that point unless you intensely love the people. And if you intensely love the people, eventually the topic will not be as important. So why not start by just letting the topic be what it's going to be so that you can be the personality you'd like to be? It won't work for everybody, but that's the shows I listen to. You know, I listen to... like recently, the Accidental Tech podcast with Casey Liss and John Siracusa and Siracusa, there's no Z in Siracusa, and Marco Arment, because I enjoy listening to them talk about stuff. I understand almost nothing John Siracusa says ever because he's so much smarter than me, but I really like that show because I like those characters. That was a very long answer, but I think it's worth talking about because it's easy to get blinded by some picture of success that involves doing a topic that's already overcovered, but only you can be you. Cheesy as that sounds, there's not a single other person in the universe that can be you, especially if you're interesting. So why don't you figure out how to do something that has longevity in your own interest and then try to serve the people who will enjoy that rather than worrying about the people who will never like you no matter what. Isn't that fancy? Isn't that fine for Merlin?
That's fine for Merlin. And yeah, it makes me...
Yours is different though, because an interview show, by nature, you're going to have people, you know, people who like you are going to listen every episode, but you have the advantage, and believe me, I know this, there's a reason people invite me on, I suppose, is that you get in, bring in somebody that somebody may be familiar, I'm not trying to sound famous or something, but you know, you bring in somebody who has a following and may go listen to that show they've never heard before. That's why people do interview shows a lot of the time. Somebody like Chris Hardwick or Thorne are such interesting characters that what they bring to an interview is much more than asking somebody to promote their latest movie. Terry Gross, ditto for Terry Gross.
Yeah, and that's exactly deciding to do a show to begin with, and maybe you have some buddies you want to do a show with on a topic, and the tech, like you and I and a lot of the folks who probably listen to this are in that sort of tech sphere, and it's it seems like the sort of knee-jerk reaction. And I have a show that I kind of do that with, where we're some buddies and we talk about stuff, and that's fine for us, I guess. But I agree in terms of longevity. Aside from maybe the folks who edit The Daily Show or help with The Daily Show and things like that, where they go back and watch the news, it would be a scary world if folks were like watching three-week-old news on PBR just for just for fun or whatever, I guess. But
that's not a bad example, though, because that show, because of the personalities on that show, I mean, if there's anything where you are likely to go watch something, also they're doing like things like they're doing stuff with video, and the way that they'll put, you know, what somebody said here and what they said then, and you know, Jon Stewart's reaction to it, that could have a long life, because it is so well done. And just to be clear, I'm not trying to criticize people. I'm doing the opposite of criticizing. I'm saying if whatever you're doing is working for you, that's great. But what I can say is, trying to reverse engineer success out of trying to do what other people have done and what you hope strangers will like is very difficult to do. And I don't think there's that many people who weren't already super duper famous that can pull that off. Alec Baldwin's show is great. Here's the thing. I love that show. I love the show because I love Alec Baldwin. He's a terrible interviewer. And he's constantly interrupting people and injecting his own anecdotes. Mark Maron, not a great interviewer, but his show's gotten very popular because they love his character. They love his bits. If you were to cut that out in the service of trying to be David Brinkley, that would not be a show that has gotten as successful as it has. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, the character, the person, like, that's with the voice. Yeah, with the interview show. Did you, speaking of The Wire, did you listen to Here's the Thing with David Simon yet?
Yeah. Of course I did. I did. The latest episode. I listened to Alec Baldwin episodes with people I've never heard of, just because I enjoy his rapport with people. And because, okay, again, think about, you know, that word curation has fallen out of favor. But editorial decisions, I don't think he's got producers out there going, here's who we can get this week. I think it seems to me that, given the scheduling or how often the show comes out, it seems to me that he's got some kind of a mental list of people he wants to talk to. He wanted to talk to Billy Joel, so he did. He wanted to talk to David Letterman.
Yeah, that was a great one.
That's what I'll tell you this, if you've never heard Here's the Thing and you like Letterman, start with that episode, because it is fantastic, and it's information that I've never heard anywhere else. But because it's two personalities that I care about and whose interaction I go, wow, I gotta listen to this. What's gonna happen, you know? Billy Joel, really? But he loves Billy Joel so much, and they have so much to talk about because of their shared background. I found it incredibly entertaining, even though I'm, you know, not the world's biggest Billy Joel fan. But I'm sorry. I'm doing that thing I said I wasn't going to do. I'm talking a lot.
Yeah, when the guest interrupts with lots of anecdotes, it's the worst. Tom York, actually, too. That's another one. I was just the only thing I'll say about Here's the Thing is they have the worst way of trying to find a show. I was just speaking of show notes and being an art, trying to find the link to the Letterman episode, and it's... I'll find it later, but
I mean, on the actual episode detail
on the
page,
WNYC.org site or whatever.
It is difficult a lot of the time, because there are shows that I really enjoy that do a couple of things I find extremely frustrating. One is, there's the basic one. The basic one is that page is there, I'm going to say, mostly for linkage and SEO reasons. What they want is they want you to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And they deliberately, some sites, I'm just telling you, man, I know how to do this stuff. I know how to find URLs. I know how to look at source code and try to reverse engineer out of the FLV, like where things are. I'm pretty good at that. I've got tools for that. And the reason I have those tools is people deliberately obfuscate the ability to get a single episode of something, which I mean, I understand why they do it, but I think it's dumb. To make it so that people can't get a little snack version of your show without committing. It's one reason I love Huffduffer. And in this instance, I put so much stuff into Huffduffer, which we should probably talk about. I think it's really underknown. But like, I might go to a place and go, oh, this sounds like an interesting episode. Or here's an episode where one of my friends is on. And I hit a button in Huffduffer, it pops up. But if it can't find an audio URL on the page, it can't be bookmarked. And so I've got to go in and do some acrobatics to find it. Anyway, I think that's frustrating, because then at that point that does really become more about the business and traffic desires of the publisher, much more so than making it easy and, if you like, democratic for your users and listeners.
Yeah, that's where actually Huffduffer is one that I think, I'm pretty sure you introduced me to it through something at some point along the way, but it's such a great service, and it boggles my mind, for as popular as podcasting has become, that it's not more popular. And maybe it is, and it's one of those neat services, kind of like Instapaper, where I'd have no idea if I didn't follow like Marco somehow that it's so popular. Like, it would just be like, well, I'm using it, why isn't everybody else? You know, because there's no social graph, so to speak, or whatever the SEO stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Keith, who put it together, is a genius. He's one of the, as far as I know, he's one of the pioneers of responsive design, and he's done such amazing stuff. And if you ever go and look at the documentation for the API, it's really crazy. The amount of work that he has put into making something that does something incredibly simple. All it really does is let you create an item that links to an audio file, but then you can subscribe to that as an RSS feed to essentially roll your own personal podcast of whatever you want to listen to. And there's a small bit of a social component to it, but it's definitely not like the biggest part. But, you know, I start out on that page of what's popular and go, oh, here's something like, I didn't know that this was out there. This is really great. You know? But I don't know. I really love it. I love it for, you know, for this, like I'm not subscribed to your show because I'm not subscribed to that many things, but I'll tell you what I will do. I'll listen to this. I'll probably go back and listen to Dan's thing. And if I really like it, I'll subscribe, but it's made it easy. It's like a little sample. But he doesn't host the file. Again, like Instapaper, it's just pointers. It's just metadata for audio. Yeah.
And I just noticed, I was looking at the site, and I'll have to try this out later. You can call the hotline, Huffduffer hotline, a US and a UK number, or Skype to just hear the latest audio. So I'm presuming that's somebody's bookmarked something. You can just tune in and listen. And that's actually where, to get a little technical on a podcast, something that I noticed Dan doing with 5x5, and I noticed when I Huffduffer... what's the vernacular? Huffduff things? I don't know. Yeah. When I Huffduff something, which take that one out of context, but
sounds like you're snorting Scotch Guard.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a long Canadian winter. The tagging thing, which I come, you know, the web world where you're building websites and tagging kind of fell out of vogue, and it's not like, aside from social media douchebag SEO folks, you know, you don't need to tag. Google does it for you. But what I found with podcasting is actually throwing a tag in, like say if you have a network or your site or your name, and having a few tags in there allows Huffduffer, for example, to very quickly build off those tags. So
you see how 5x5 is always
exactly. That's the one tag. I was like, Dan's actually doing something smart here. Not sorry, that sounded like he's doing a lot of things.
I know
smart,
what you mean.
It was like, oh yeah, like this sort of old art form of tagging everything, like we used to tag back in the day. Anyways,
I think what it's doing, I don't know this for a fact, but it's using some kind of metadata from the page. I'm tempted to say that if there's site, you know this stuff better than I do, but it does, I'm pretty sure it pulls out the keywords out of the meta tag, but I've noticed that if there's like a site description, it doesn't seem to use it. Somehow it must be something in like the little C data description field, but yeah, Dan's are really great. Cause when you huffed up anything on 5x5, it does add the tags for that series, that show, maybe not for that episode, but it also adds a description to the description text area, and it puts in the link. Huffduffer will always, if possible, put in the link to the page it got it from. But no, it's great to have that in there. So there are a lot of people who use Huffduffer exclusively personally. I also use it to try and share things with other people. Like if I want to put enough information in there, like I would do on a web, like on a blog post, I want to put in enough information to give people context. But it's very interesting, and I'm really surprised more people don't use it personally. And for myself, I'm really surprised that more publishers. I mean, the button is so simple; it's just a little bit of JavaScript you drop on your page, and whatever single page has a single audio or has audio on it, it'll work on any page. So I don't know. I'm kind of surprised more people don't use it.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about, because you put it on the Roderick site, the Roderick on the Line site has it as a Huffduffer link right there for you, and probably it gets a lot of traffic. And that's actually how when I first contacted you, I have a little bit of those vanity searches for people mentioning SSKTN or Show Me Your Mic, and just to see what's going on with it. And all of a sudden this little pop-ups that Merlin Mann had Huffduffed an episode of Show Me Your Mic. And it was like, oh, well, at least I know he's listened, or at least,
creepy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know for sure that he's listened, but at least I know he's at least huffed off something.
I have, and yeah. I did.
So there you go. It's not a completely foreign thing where I'm coming at you with a question about coming on the show.
Right.
Show notes. You mentioned that being an art that of something that I know, like, definitely with Back to Work, it's an art unto itself almost. but something that I'm sure you've seen as you look around, it's a bit of the bane of the existence of a lot of podcasters to do it, because not everybody has a, like Dan's great tool for the bookmarklet or whatever system that he's got, where it's kind of embedding it into the page as you go and things like that, I presume. But what is that? What did you mean by it's a bit of an art, and how do you look at it, and why do you do it?
I'm glad you asked. I think that's a good question. I'm glad you asked. I guess starting with Back to Work, you're right. The technology that Dan has put together is really great. I mean, he built that entire CMS himself. He makes the updates to it himself. And just as a little bit inside baseball, but he's got for each show, and I think maybe for each person with access to the CMS, you drag up a little bookmark. There's a bookmarklet. There's a bookmarklet for add this note to the current episode of this show, or add this link to the next episode of the show. And so you could, and now he's recently updated that. So if I'm on a page and I know if the show is in production or hasn't, you know, started yet, I can select stuff on a page, hit the next show link. I get a little pop-up, and now I know that link with the correct title and whatever I had selected is in there as the description. That's something new that he's recently added. And so, you know, if there's something obscure we've mentioned on the show, even in passing, I made some kind of really, believe it or not, really stupid joke where I acted like I didn't know Don Ameche's name. And so I can add in a link to Don Ameche. I can add in a Wolfram Alpha link to show how much money Martin and Lewis made in the 50s. So he's made it, he's added, the point being, he's added all of that in such a way that, you know, he's made it easy for his hosts and producers to collect those things in a way that is, I can't imagine being any more seamless. And I love doing it. Weeks like this week, it's been kind of a crazy week with WWDC and stuff. So I didn't do what I usually do. But I mean, you know, for anybody coming in and hoping that they're going to find links to, you know, white papers about XML, they're not going to find that. But if they like the show, I think they will hopefully be entertained by seeing here's a link to something about toxoplasmosis, as well as a description of what that is. Well, why would anybody want that? Well, you'll want it if you listened to the show and laughed along about cat ladies. Like, that'll be funny. So in that instance, Dan's made that very easy to do. The one with Roderick on the line, I have a pretty clever hack for that that I used to use. It's purely a matter of time. I don't have time to do it. But if anybody wants, here's an easy, really easy way to do this. If you want show notes and an easy way to do it. I am an ardent fan of Pinboard, a great, you know, are you familiar with it?
Paid member.
Yeah. I mean, it was originally designed as a replacement for Delicious, but Pinboard has a wealth of awesome bookmarklets for adding stuff. Very much the same way, you can select stuff on a page, hit a link, and it gets added to your Pinboard. Most Pinboards are public, mine is private. So, for example, let's say you've done an episode of a show and there's like 10 things you want to bookmark. If you had to do that all with, you know, if you don't have the same Byzantine browser setup that I've got using Markdown and stuff, it's a real pain in the butt. You know, have to copy 3 or 4 things to go put that somewhere. And that's why we generally see in most show notes a link to something that person has done, their Twitter feed, and a couple Amazon links. And that's, you know, because that's what somebody has time and interest to do. With the Pinboard, my suggestion with Pinboard is go through, blast through everything. I would even put them in new tabs, new tab, new tab, new tab. Here's 10 things I want to bookmark. And go through, hit that Pinboard button, where it's adding the description. This is going to seem really obvious, but I think it's pretty clever. You know, add it, all 10. Then go into Pinboard, and it's trivially easy to add a tag to all of those. And in this instance, you know, like I might say ROTL010 is a tag. You can guess what that means. That means these are all going to be show notes that I use for Roderick on the Line number 10. And then you grab a chunk of JavaScript that says, on this page, show all of the bookmarks that have this tag.
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's a really fast way to do it. So you add everything to Pinboard, and then using an embed, I think it's a JavaScript embed, you just drop in a line or two of JavaScript in the show notes description area of that page. And if it's, you know, correctly unescaping and handling JavaScript, you'll get all your notes right in there. Why else is that great? If you add new notes in the future, it'll appear there automatically.
Yeah. Yeah, if you go back and listen to it again or someone sends in.
But yeah, so if you want to get into that, you don't have to, even if you only do 5 or 10 notes per show, that's one pretty simple way to do that. And if you're using something like Squarespace, I have to guess that I bet there's a way to hack it together so that it would automatically increment with what episode number it is. I mean, if you know the first thing about any scripting or development tool, I would have to imagine that's pretty easy to do. But that's really fast. And I think people really like it. Our show goes over the top. But I always feel like if I arrive, this is totally personal, but if I arrive at a page and it says, you know, interview with Mary Smith. Mary Smith is a social media consultant, mother, farmer, and thinker. And it's got a link to her Twitter page. Like, okay, you know, that and $5 will get me a cup of coffee. Why don't you tell me a little more about what's going on? Because if I see a link to GitHub, I go, oh, this person's a developer. If I see a link to Rolling Stone magazine with their name in the title, I go, oh, this is probably an entertainment person. But, you know, if you're trying to attract people with the kind of show that I don't do, it really benefits you to show people kind of what you talked about in there. What I mean? I think you do people a service. And also, the last thing on Rock on the Line, I used to do an extremely long description for each show that would tantalize people with the incredibly bizarre topics. And I think that's, you know, I tend to think of writing in my head. The fancy version of writing is, you know, writing something long and cogent in paragraphs that people read. But it's still writing if it's little things that you put craft into. And anywhere you can do that, more than just perfunctorily dropping in a bunch of descriptive text, it adds more flavor to what you're doing. And if you write that in the voice of that people will understand is you actually writing that. It's not like some producer or bot came in and auto-generated that. I think that, again, adds to the voice of the show.
Yeah, so in as much as 5x5's quote-unquote voice would be, you know, with that, a wealth of metadata, I guess, and sort of show notes, et cetera. And Roderick on the Line, sort of the other extreme of being a bit more opaque and like this, like you said, just a one-line description of the episode. And you're going to listen and find out. And we may or may not talk about things and we may or may not link to things, but you're going to enjoy it.
Very well put. And if I did attempt to do that, here's what that would sound like. In this episode, John and Merlin start out talking about nasal congestion, then have a very funny bit about why you have to show respect to crows, and then John tells a really long story about the Balkans, and then there's a bell at the end. Like, if I say it to people, like, even somebody who likes the show would read that and go, like, that's horrible. That show is, one reason we haven't gone out of our way to get sponsors is that we very pretentiously consider each program to be part of its own little universe. Or you know what I mean? The show as itself is its own universe. And if we had, I don't want to offend any of your sponsors, but like if we had a...
it's okay. I don't have sponsors.
If we dropped in a pre-recorded segment about audiobook subscription services, that would be very jarring because that's not part of that universe. And in the case of You Look Nice Today, for example, Scott and I, we kind of take turns and kind of collaborate. Each episode, we write something in the description field that is either something like a fake letter from the board, or it's some kind of if we've made up something about come to Dubai so you you can ride on these things called Tang Tangs. We'll have like a description, a pretty straight-faced description. And then we might include a few bullets about other things we talked about. But this is really long-winded, but I think... You know, to get people to listen to and enjoy what you do, I mean, it helps a lot to understand what success in that would look like for you, who you want to be, who you want to sound like, and who you'd like to reach. And then once you narrow that down from everything in the world to a handful of things, you can decide what's going to work. You know, I go out there and go steal some image off the internet to use for Roderick on the Line. I apply a halftone screen. I make it, you know, pretty light, and I put it up. And that's kind of just a thing we do. And every week someone comes in and sees that, and maybe they would titter. If they come in one week, you know, and it's a picture of John and I, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, it's inscrutable, but it's got its own internal logic. And so anybody who's listening who wants something potentially nominally useful, I would just say try to find what that thing is for you. Add some flavor. You know, nobody needs another podcast about stuff where it doesn't have any personality to it.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean?
There's enough of that.
To not go back to making this a tech podcast, but it's a similar idea, I guess, that I hear a lot of smart tech nerd folks talk about with when they're talking about like the iOSs and the things, you know, the little delights and the little touches that they put into when you scroll and it does some sort of smooth buttery scrolling as opposed to
like tap all the
tap bots guys, yeah, the tweet bot and stuff. Yeah. Similar here, I think it's just little touches that you're rewarding the listener or the reader on the site, like with You Look Nice Today, especially like you're rewarding those folks for knowing what's going on and understanding enough to be able to enjoy the letter from the board or whatever and those kinds of things. And you,
that's actually a really good analogy. And I agree with what you're saying. The other example that comes straight to mind is Panic, who makes things like Transmit, yeah, and Coda. But what is Transmit? Transmit is an FTP app.
Like unsexy.
Okay. Yeah. So basically you've taken like arguably one of the simplest terminal command line commands. I'm having trouble saying what that is. How hard is it to use FTP even from the command line? You type in SFTP and your paths and your flags or attributes for what you wanted to do. And you do what? But they've made their webpage is gorgeous and fun to use. They were long before Ajax had a name. They had a way of dragging the apps that you wanted into a basket. And I'm talking about 8 years ago. And all of their stuff has so much personality and flair and sense of finish. So in a way where the app I used to use, like Fetch, I used Fetch for years, and it's great. It had a little animated dog while it was uploading. But, you know, they bought a building. They've somehow become so successful with that. Coda is not an app for everybody. I don't use Coda because it doesn't fit the way I work, but it's gorgeous, and I can highly recommend it to a lot of people. But they make the thing that they want to make with their own imprimatur, and that's what makes people love them. They don't love them because they try to make something that everybody's going to like. They try to make something that they can be proud of.
Yeah, and that's where I think folks maybe who listen to this, and I know I've felt this too over the years, you know, doing whether it's trying to do podcasting or trying to be like blogging, and it's sort of the source of that, the whole running gag on Back to Work, where it's that's fine for Merlin. Like they'll listen to this and think, great, I'm just going to go do my thing because screw the man and the way they, because you listen to a lot of, how to do a podcast. You need to, you have a 20-second intro that gives people a little teaser of what they're going to have. You hit the intro music and you talk about your guest if it's an interview show for, 2 minutes, and then you get into the discussion. Halfway through, you have your sponsor break. And at the end, you summarize very nicely for people, give them all the links to where they can find the stuff and send them on their way. And which is sort of the formula, right? And you're, like you said, this sounds like I'm mad at you, I'm not mad at you. I'm just, it's trying to like break out of that and do your own thing, which I'm encouraging folks who, if you're listening to this and thinking about podcasting, to do. Because in the end, it's going to, even if it's not commercially successful, it's going to bring you a lot more non-monetary joy, I think, in what you're doing, if you'd really love what you're doing. And I'm trying to get to a question in there, but just,
but how does one get to the point where they, let me ask you this. How many podcasts do you listen to? I assume you listen to podcasts.
No, yeah.
But you've heard them. I'll specifically ask you this. How many podcasts do you listen to from people you're not familiar with or whose voice you couldn't identify that aren't your friends? I think most people, if they were honest, they would say, well, actually, most podcasts I listen to more than once, I know who the hosts are, and I look forward to what they have to say this episode. And you might listen to your friends because you enjoy hearing what your friends say. If they're not, I'm not trying to make that a bifurcation. All I'm trying to say is like that's fine for Merlin. My problem with the that's fine for Merlin thing is I don't understand how do you find a better way? I mean, racing toward mediocrity is not going to get you advertisers. That, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter if your show is big or famous or whatever. Advertisers are looking for people, yes, that have an audience, but they're looking for people who have a very loyal and engaged audience. They're looking for people who will tell their friends about this. And if the problem is, and I have to just mention this, I'm always feeling like I have to mention this because it's easier to just go listen to this than hear me say it again. But a talk that John Gruber and I did at South by Southwest a few years ago about how fancy it is to do all these things. Well, like, tell me who out there that you really like and respect a lot is doing anything different than what I'm describing. There's a lot of people struggling and saying, well, you know, I've got to be the next person who blogs or podcasts about this same thing 1,000 people of others have already said. Well, that works as a MacGuffin, as a way to get people in on a topic, but I don't know how you keep them over time without making them want to hear what you said. I mean, I can find out that information. I can't avoid finding out that information in 1,000 places. Why would I want to go to you for that? And then once you figure that out, you iterate and improve upon that. And if somebody has a formula for success that isn't, you know, cheating with SEO, that's better than that, then they don't need this. They don't need this help. I'm only trying to help people who want to be great at it, but feel hung up because they're stuck in this mediocrity loop. Which, you know, I'm not saying everything I do is great, but people like it and they do listen to it and they look forward to it. And if I tried to make that something that was instantly understandable to everybody in the world, I'd hate it, they'd hate it, and everybody who used to love the show would stop listening because there's 1,000 other places they could go for precisely the same thing.
Yeah, that's the perfect antidote in a way to the "that's fine for Merlin" discussion or argument or whatever.
It's a joke, but it's also kind of not a joke. People get pissed, It's a shame, you know. I mean, you know, it's not that I take it personally. It's more like I don't get mad at people because they said something. A stranger said something mean to me. I got past that a long time ago. What I'm getting mad about is somebody who's trying to blame the apparent success of other people for what they won't admit they're just not trying hard enough at, or they don't care enough about. You know, I've never seen anybody get far in life by doing that. And if they do, they end up sad and bitter. You know, why don't you just go out there and try to make something awesome that you really like? And if you like it enough, there's a pretty good chance somebody else might like it. If nobody likes it, try something else. But, you know, we've already got a TechCrunch. We've already got a Daring Fireball. We've got plenty of that. Like, where are you in aping that? Where are you in attracting me to that or whomever? By going, oh, this person seems to have a unique perspective on this. That's all I'm saying, because you'll be happier, your listeners will be happier. And if you get 100 people that download it every week, they're going to care tons more than if you have 0 people who happen to just not care. That's all.
If a podcast is published, nobody listens.
You're probably talking about microphones, right?
Does anybody hear? Well, I think it's just...
It's very zen, like chocolate.
It is. What bugs me, too, and not to jump up on the soapbox with you with it, but it does take away from what you have built in terms of what you've done, but also that it's not a given that every episode of Back to Work is going to be listened to by the hundreds of people, however many people actually listened or whatever. You know, it's not a given that that's going to stay there. And Dan, when I had Dan on, and I've heard him say this on other shows too, is Dan Benjamin over at 5x5, is, you know, and it may be a bit of a bit, but it's also reality too, I think, is, you know, he wakes up every morning a bit afraid that it's going to all go away, that what he's built up is going to disappear. And I think for anybody, that's the danger, I guess, of the internet with the ubiquity of, I can be like talking to Merlin Mann right here, right now, is a big deal for a whole bunch of people, myself included. But one silo over on the internet, it's, they could care less about Merlin Mann and who he is or what it is. And it's not,
but yeah, but like, why wouldn't that be okay?
Yeah, why exactly?
Right? But like, B, why wouldn't that be okay? But A, guys, everything goes away. When Dan and I talk about being scared, it's not to try and sound like we're sage. In my case, I'm saying it because I know everything goes away. You know, but I mean, wouldn't it be nice to get to the point where you can have something nice that goes away rather than never having made something that you care about going away? You know what I mean? If you just kind of fade away at this thing that you weren't really trying all that hard at or didn't care that much about, and I, you know, I am in no way trying to say what I do is difficult, because it's not. I've chosen it because it's not difficult.
Yeah,
no, I mean, there's a lot of people who try really hard at something they don't like and then can't understand why they're unhappy. You know, this is something I'm, and the only proviso or the only addendum to that is that I am trying to do more of these things that are more diverse. And I'm really kind of banging my head around trying to figure out what that should be. But I don't know. This does become like a Back to Work thing, I guess. But, you know, anybody out there who thinks that everybody else isn't scared too is out of their skull. I mean, but, you know, it will go away. I hate to be the one to break it to you, but we're all gonna be dead sooner than we think. And we have a limited amount of time to try and make something that will make us happy and proud and be appealing to other people, you know, and just sitting on your own consolation that the world is weird because all these fancy people get to make things you don't. Like, show me anybody who succeeded with that. It just doesn't happen. You know what I mean? That's all. Sorry. It makes me mad, but not really. Yeah. Except it does.
Podcast angry.
Podcasting, am I right?
I'm going to steal a question from a friend, Carrie, who sent this in. I think she's listening, and she's wearing a That's Fine from Merlin.
Hi, Carrie.
Shirt, I think.
Wait. Is Carrie a yes. female? Wow. That makes two.
Two. Oh, two.
Yeah, well, not my wife. My wife won't wear it. My daughter sleeps in my That's Fine from Merlin shirt sometimes. But hi, Carrie. Thank you.
She was she tweeted at me saying, and this is something I wanted to ask you, but with the show, like, say, Back to Work, and You Look Nice Today, obviously, extenuating circumstances maybe caused it to end, but also it's kind of like a knowing when to end a show is part of its success in a way. And you know, would the Beatles be as big if they hadn't broken up and all those, you know, big cultural things, but to go down to where the level we're talking about here, like knowing when to keep doing the thing that you've always been doing and what's been working versus trying something new that might be better, but, you know, is going to be hard for one and scary. And so something like I know you've mentioned on a few different shows, I think in various places, where you've got some other project that you're working on. And so you've got, you know, Back to Work, Roderick on the Line, and maybe something else in the works that you're sort of building towards, and whatever you want to talk about that I is fine, but just more the idea of, does Back to Work go on indefinitely? And how do you know when it might be time to stop? And not that I think you should, but when that comes.
I think it's a great question. Just in general, it would be difficult to answer that specifically because I'm not, well, no, just because I'll just say this. I'll say in general that, because of my own faults as a human, a lot of things that have ended in my life, I didn't realize that they were for practical purposes over for a long time before I did realize it. Realizing that something is over is not the same thing as that thing being over. You know, see also the Civil War and the notion of a flat Earth. The Earth has been spherical for a long time. And whether or not somebody decides that their group, you can get the biggest group in the world that you want who ardently believes that the Earth is not spherical. And you might really believe it, and maybe your membership fees are up and the new t-shirts are in, but it doesn't change the reality that that you're living in a dream world. And so I guess one thing would be that I'm trying to avoid the word pessimistic. You don't want to be pessimistic about going, oh, is this over? Will this end? I would say just in general, like, everything does end, but, you know, I forget who said this. I feel like somebody I know said this, but I might've read it in a book or something. But, some people will notice what you do in life, but more people will notice how you handled what you did in life, which is why I find myself saying things like, well, you know, if you are going to quit your job, I would say don't do it by George Costanza, you know, steaming your way out of the office. The emotional payback that you get from that is far offset by how much of a tool you seem to be. And whether or not that comes back to haunt you, like, is that the person that you want to be? So first of all, if you're going to end something, I say, you know, try to end it classy when you can. I've had plenty of stuff just peter off because I'm not really done with it, but maybe it's done with me. But knowing it's over, specifically with regard to a podcast, you don't find yourself looking forward to doing it. And once you are doing it, you may not find that much to say. Candidly, when you start worrying more about your metrics on viewers and or listeners and like what kinds of famous people you can get on, if that's the kind of show you do, well, then maybe that's something you can get help with. But I think when it stops being something you look forward to, it's not a great sign. Candidly, if I find out the people I like and respect have stopped listening to it for reason X, that gives me pause. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say that there have been times in the past that I've stopped doing audio projects because I found out how much my friends thought the show was insufferable, which made me rethink it a little bit. I'll make my own decision about whether it's insufferable. Yeah. I'll make my own decision about whether I enjoy it or maybe there's money in it. I mean, we all got to do what we do, mm-hmm. right? But knowing when it's over to me is, you know, maybe your relationship with the people you work with isn't so great. maybe you're not happy with what it is. I'm not the poster boy for this, but I think it always helps to be working on a few things at once, because it keeps you from getting too wound up. I'm not saying you should be careless, but if you're working on several things at once, ideally including things you haven't, that aren't public yet, I think that gives you more creative energy to do things. If all you do is this one thing and you keep banging your head against the wall, wondering why it's not a giant success, you don't have any time away or any perspective. Where if you did try something else and you went, whoa, this is kind of more fun to do and my friends are more excited about it, well, the other thing might be over just because you don't have the time, attention, or interest to do it anymore. Or maybe you just do it for a little while, or maybe you do it less often. But the problem with all of these is we inject so much emotion and so much sunk cost into it. We go, oh, I've been doing this thing I hate for 2 years. How could I possibly stop it? Okay, hope that works out. But knowing when it's over, I don't know. I'd be curious to hear what you think of that.
Well,
how would you know when you're done here?
Well, you mean this show? I guess when it's done, when my stomach says I can't keep talking, I need to go eat something, is probably my limit. So I'll...
Not this episode. How would you know you're done with this property?
Well, that's right. I think there's a, when you're talking, I was kind of thinking there's sort of the life cycle of a podcast, maybe, and this may sound like complete malarkey, as we say. We don't really say that. But like the beginning of the show, like the first 5 episodes or so, I'm that guy, like just what you're describing, like how many people are listening? What am I, who's tuning in? You know, who's half-duffed? All those kinds of things. Whereas then it hits a bit of a stride, and not that this one's peaked yet by any, hopefully not, but you know, it hits that stride and you kind of like, you relax and you just enjoy doing the show, right? Like that's, I would guess, you know, something like Back to Work, I'm sure you're aware in general of the numbers, but you're not checking them every 5 minutes of excuse me, of how many people are listening.
I check some things every 5 minutes. I'm not gonna act like I don't,
because
you know, everybody wants to be loved,
and
But 2 bad weeks in a row of traffic would not be enough to make me want to throw in the towel, for sure.
Right, and that's what I mean. Like sort of you relax and enjoy doing the show. You're running, whether it's the show or it's a business, you're sort of enjoying doing it, and the numbers just kind of are there, and the dollars and all that kind of stuff are working, and you're aware of them. But whereas I would guess there would come a point with this show where the hassle of booking guests, preparing for it, record, like having to listen to someone, like it's one thing to interview somebody who blogs, let's say, or is writing or paints pictures, but to interview folks who do a podcast, it's just a lot of time spent researching, and I don't want to do a disservice to them by not listening to anything they've done, because I get people who want to be on the show now, and so it's fun meeting new folks who are doing this and finding out why and how and all that kind of stuff, but I don't have time to listen to every single episode that they've done, obviously, in preparation. And so, you know, at some point I would guess that would become more work painful than the reward of getting to talk to those folks and publishing the episode. And
especially if you're feeling frustrated about stuff like the money or the traffic,
yeah.
Let's be honest, you know, the internet, for better or for worse, provides us lots of kinds of feedback about how we're doing. And for me, I mean, I will look at something like how many people have retweeted a link to an episode. I might look at, you know, the download numbers. I might look at whether a lot of people have put it on Huffduffer, all out of morbid and self-involved curiosity. But you know what I get out of that? I get the feeling of being completely perplexed out of that. Whether that's You Look Nice Today's most popular and least popular episodes, which have nothing to do with my favorite episodes or least favorite episodes. It's really weird. I mean, looking at the numbers for Back to Work, Dan's talked about this before. It's mind-boggling how different our download numbers will be. I don't want to say from 1 week to another, but if you took a sampling of 8 weeks of the show, for example, the shows we did about getting things done, a couple episodes of that were well above our usual number of downloads. But we'll do a show, let's say in the abstract, a show that a lot of our fans really liked, then a lot of people are talking about, something where people are making fan art, you know, ditto Roderick on the Line. And it might be the smallest or second smallest number of downloads out of, you know, 8 weeks. So what do I get out of that? Well, now I'm perplexed. So what do I do as a result of that? You know, that's, to me, that's always important to think about. When you apply your attention to something, you know, what do you change about yourself as a result? I have no idea what to change. What am I going to do? So now I'm going to go, in case you missed it, here's my fifth, you know, link to this thing. I know that's annoying. I struggle with that. I don't know how much of like pimping my own stuff I should do. But all I can say is that one impulse that I've had sometimes, and I think a lot of people have a lot of times, is if I don't have what I want of this, I should either lower my standards or increase my amount of trying to promote. And that's not a bad thing to do. But there are people and shows that I enjoy who I wish would stop talking so much about what they do. If you would produce more great stuff, other people would do that for you. You know, the hard part is I understand the need to bootstrap. In that case, if we're going to be cynical about this, let's be real cynical. Go to your most high-powered friends who love what you do and ask them to talk about it somewhere. It's cheesy, but I think it's more honest than trying to post the same thing on seven different platforms that's, you know, retwittering your Tumblr and your Facebook and with the same beige, you know, name of an episode. And, you know, everybody does a little of that. This is our job. It's what we do. We got to promote it. But like instead, like, well, what's the show you want to have? Who would want to talk about your show on your behalf? And what would they say about it? As they used to say, write the headlines. How would you love that to turn out? Great. Focus on that if you want. If, you know, if you're really serious about this and have a business, build metrics around that. You know, there's nothing cynical about wanting to succeed with what you do. There is something silly about trying to do that in a way that's not effective and then wondering what's wrong with the world. But especially, you know, I get really frustrated sometimes with the what I perceive to be the numbers on Roderick on the Line. I've never done anything, including You Look Nice Today, that has more of an ardent cult following. And it makes me so happy. I can't believe the fan art that people make about John. It's really incredible. And then I look at the numbers and go, this is really strange. In a way, it's a good thing because it means we haven't gotten to the point of being listened to by people who don't care. But it is perplexing. But at the end of the day, that's what I get. I get perplexed. I go, why did so many people retweet this episode but not that one? And why am I suddenly asking what kind of person I am as a result of that? It doesn't make me feel better. It doesn't make me stop, but it also doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel weird and double insecure.
Which is fine for Merlin.
It is so fine for Merlin. Carrie?
Yeah.
Was that her name? Carrie? Do you think that answered Carrie's question?
I think so. I think she sent me a message.
I can't even remember it anymore. I should take more of my pills.
The blue one, maybe.
I love the blue ones.
Let's see where the my notes are all over the place, but it's fine. That's fine for Chris. With the back to work, something just completely different tangent here. No nice little segue other than me awkwardly talking for the last 10 seconds. You recently just met for the first time, actually, which I think someone who jumped in, this is just a neat idea to me, is someone who jumped in, like my mom, who hopefully she wouldn't fall asleep listening back to work if she listened long enough to you guys. She
would probably need to lay down.
Definitely.
For sure.
I mean, that's no, that's a given. But she would assume that you guys have met, first of all, that you're probably in the room together if in some sort of, you know, never mind the fact that she doesn't understand podcasting and I'll stop picking on my mom, but you know, somebody who listens to it and just pictures a typical radio broadcast podcast show, you're in the same room, you're talking to each other, you have notes prepared that this is when Dan's going to say this thing and you're going to joke about that. But you guys,
Almost like an outline or a script.
Like it's completely scripted. I assume it is each episode, but
people used to think that of You Look Nice Today, which is totally understandable and completely not understandable.
Yeah.
It's so strange to me to imagine us sitting there with even a like a retro script, like something with like, okay, here's the beats. Like, you know, oh wow, that would be really challenging to do.
I think that's another tangent, but I think it's so hard for folks to understand the not to suck up to you, but like the talent that goes into making a show like You Look Nice Today, because it's not just, in as much as it is just three guys sitting around having a drink and talking, it's three guys who understand each other and know how to play off each other and know how to riff and know how to understand comedy in a podcast, just happens to be in a podcast setting. And I think the shows I've listened to when you've done live stuff and stuff, it's, you know, it speaks to the fact that you are legitimately talented in that. It's not just
I appreciate you saying that. It's super nice, but I mean maybe another way to spin that, if I may, is that if you think about any team that you like, even if it's a sketch comedy team, not even if, but think about a sketch comedy team, think about sports commentators, think about a panel news show, And again, I mean, those may all be things that I'm not personally interested in, but I think it's fair to say that, or, you know, MacBreak Weekly would be another example. I mean, I think one reason you get a, you know, even if you are there primarily for the topic and the content, tech or otherwise, it's the relationships and the fact that these people do have an under, have a relationship that you're interested in and that you understand. And like, you think about a great sketch, especially from like an improv group, is like the whole point of that sketch is about what the audience can see about their relationships of the characters that may or may not be obvious to the people on stage. That's what makes for good drama in some ways. There's somebody up here who doesn't know who they are, and that's interesting. Or, you know, that's part of the conceit. Or something like when you listen to, you know, sports commentators, the way that they interact with each other becomes a huge part of why you like them. And, you know, this goes way beyond podcasts. I think any time, you know, to use that word character might be a little bit extreme, but maybe persona. You know, Dan and I understand, I think, I don't want to, you know, spill the milk here, but like, I think we understand our characters on the show and our relationship on the show. And that leads to that rhythm. Same thing with You Look Nice Today. And there's lots of shows like that. And I think you tend to not notice that until it doesn't work. And if you hear people who sound like they're frustrated with each other, you know, one person is really doggedly trying to stay on topic, and the other person obviously doesn't care and is drunk or something. Like, if that's the case, there's no guarantee that that will be entertaining or long-lived. But I'm not just talking about podcasts here. I appreciate you saying that, but if everybody involved is okay with the version of themselves that each person is being over time, then you can develop an on-air relationship or on-camera relationship that people will come and watch. I mean, McLaughlin Group, the way they, you know, when I used to watch that, I used to watch it just for them screaming at each other because I liked their characters yelling at each other. You know, it's not that different from pro wrestling in a lot of ways. If two people sat down and went, well, item one, let's discuss all the things we disagree about with regard to our wrestling careers. Now let's go in and wrestle. Like, that would not be interesting. You want somebody up there in a crowd screaming and hitting somebody with a chair. I mean, that's why you show up.
So are you Hulk Hogan and Dan's Randy Savage, or who's?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know. I used to be really into pro wrestling when I was a kid.
Me too, actually. It's a bit embarrassing to admit sometimes in certain company, but no, totally.
Well, there are so many more embarrassing things to admit about being young. Yeah. That didn't really answer your question, did it?
No, nothing. But it's fine. That's fine. For Merlin, and it's fine okay. For this podcast. No, it did. It's I think that's something I know people have struggled with when they listen to shows, and then the on-air persona versus what's reality. Maybe not that reality is bad, but that, like, this show is, I would think is a fair representation of myself and what I presume to be you. But again, you know, there I'm putting on. I don't normally walk around interviewing people on the street, and when I'm talking with friends, we're just kind of talking. I don't have a list of questions prepared and all that kind of stuff. So it is a bit of a on-air thing, and I think there is that struggle as a podcaster, a broadcaster, and it applies, like you said, to a lot of other realms, but limiting it even just to podcasting and developing a bit of that, I think, for people who are getting into this, and it has to be obviously true to you, but
I think there's an analogy though that the best word I could think of is context. Think about the context for how you behave or speak. Think about how you think or speak in different contexts. The way that you would talk at holiday dinner when you're sitting next to grandma might be different from the way you talk to your supervisor during your annual, you know, evaluation. Could be different from how you talk about the person that you have drinks with every week. Could be different from how you talk to your kid when it's time to get serious about, you know, talking about why we don't play in the street. You're the same person in all of those instances. You may have the same values. You may have the same everything, but whether you realize it or not, you're modulating the way you perceive other people and the way that you present yourself based on those contexts. And to think that being on a podcast is any different is kind of crazy. You don't have to be false, but you have to understand what the context for that is to respond appropriately. Do you know what I mean?
Certainly.
We all understand that. And on some level, we don't have to like it, but we can all understand that in life. So, you know, we're performing. We're all performing. And if you think you're not, well, maybe you should look again. Because if you think enough of what you do to record it and ask people to listen to it, you're performing. And so, you know, if you are going to have a performance, it's not at all self-involved to understand you know, what your character or persona is. And it doesn't have to be a huge, big, strong. Think about Bill Moyers or Charlie Rose. Both, I think, extremely good interviewers. Again, I don't know if you get it up there, but, you know, Terry Gross. There are people who are such good, Ray Suarez, people who are such good interviewers, and they're great at getting good stuff out of their guests. With each one of those people, they may get slightly different good stuff out of their guests. Their demeanor may encourage that person to reveal different kinds of things about themselves. So it would be really facile to say that, oh, they are the interviewer and here comes the interesting person. Because you've certainly seen things where you can tell the interviewer, the interviewee is like, oh, God. But another kind of person like Jeff Bridges seems to really actually enjoy talking to Charlie Rose. I don't know why, but he does. It makes him happy. Me talking to iMike is just totally fun to me. It's not really increasingly less interview stuff and more chatting. But in each of those instances, you know, that person seems like this wholly formed entity that's probably always been that way. But that person had to iterate. That person had to learn. David Letterman used to be a weatherman. And what he wanted to do did not fit into that context. Saying that there was hail the size of canned hams was not something that was appropriate in that context. And he struggled and struggled and struggled. He had a morning talk show that was a total bomb. And it wasn't until he found that place at NBC that things started to happen. And then, you know what? Talking about things ending. And then it didn't work out anymore. He wasn't happy with where it was going. So he went to CBS. I mean, oh, that's good. That's fine for David Letterman. But he had to go through a lot of things until he found the context that got him what he needed and the audience that he wanted. So, you know, and things do end. So that's a downer. But I don't know. If you realize that what you're doing is a performance that you can always improve, but you know, you have to trust whatever character you're doing or who you're being, I think you have to trust that person and stay true to that person unless there's a reason not to. And then to think that there's not a character or person there, I can almost guarantee that what you're doing is not super interesting to people.
Yeah, because even this, what I'm doing with you, is a character. It's a version of me. People listening get an impression of who I am, what I look like, what I sound like, all that kind of stuff. Normally, I don't talk into a Heil PR40 when I walk around into a mic stand and all that kind of stuff. We're kind of just so we can appease the folks who are listening who need gear talk.
Finally, we get to the interesting stuff. 90. I have no mic skills. And so, on the advice of, I want to say, Leo Laporte, I got a Rode Podcaster, which I think is the official microphone of people who are on podcasts and don't know what they're doing. with a really nice, I like it, this ProLine desktop boom. I don't have one of those big fancy ones. I've got one that I take on and off my desk as needed. I run the USB into my giant but Dell monitor. And that goes to my very, very, very old Mac Pro. And that's pretty much it for that. My greatest addition in the last year, my friend Jamie Phelps sent me this Logitech Bluetooth keyboard, which is so much more quiet.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when we very first started talking, you might have heard, pakada, 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 because I was still using my, Tactile Pro. Right. It was so loud. But now I have the presence of mind. I have this whole, like, crazy Howard Hughes ritual I go through before a show. I got to close the window, got to get the keyboard, got to set this up, got to turn off Dropbox. That's huge. I mean, I think a lot of people that are getting started don't realize, if you go and look at Activity Monitor, look at your network, you wouldn't believe how much stuff is running in the background that could be hurting your audio quality. Can I just give you some random tips? Is that useful at all? Not you, but your listeners. Cool. Whoever has the fastest connection generally should host the call. I don't know why. This is not to be ping pong, but this is standard Skype voodoo, is that whoever has the fastest connection should host. You'll get a better quality even if you're not doing a double ender. Oh, God, and from 45 minutes ago, double enders are really hard. Do you do a double ender? Oh my God, it's so hard to do, because I didn't know until recently. Double ending is where everybody records their own end and then one person edits them together. There's like a millisecond, like, differences in CPUs mean that over like an hour or an hour and a half, like, it won't match anymore. Can you imagine how maddening that would be to
the
fix?
People who do it, more power to you, I guess, but it seems so maddening to me. And maybe there's shows like you talked about Jason Snell doing Incomparable, where it's...
Jason, you look nice today. We do that.
Yeah, where it's, you know, you're chopping it all up anyways, and you're just dragging bits around, like digital bits, not necessarily comedic, I guess both. But and dragging them around, and then you're not worried about time because you're chopping it all up anyways. There's no continuity that you're worried about. Whereas, you and I, this show, talking, it would just be painful. And I've tried to do, I help edit other shows where we try to do sort of a double ender kind of idea, and it would just get out of sync, and then
greatly increases the production time. But you know, one thing I do is this is crazy, but I've got a little text file to remind me of all the things I need to do, because the truth is, if I forget to turn off Dropbox, you know, there's going to be a lot of the show that we may have to throw away because you get robot voice. Something I did recently that's really silly but has been helpful. The thing is, then I really want to remember to turn Dropbox back on. I want to remember to turn lots of stuff back on. So I created a folder with some symbolic links to the apps that I always want to remember to reopen. And so I open up that folder, select them all, and hit open, and I'm back up running. I think Brett Terpstra might have written an Apple script. I think there are Apple scripts and such out there that you can say, okay, go quit all of these particular things every time I record. Right, yeah. I mean, I do sometimes, if it's a really, really like important thing, I'll like do stuff. This sounds nuts, but it's superstition. But I'll turn my iPad and my iPhone either into airplane mode, or I'll shut it completely down. I don't want the vibrations being heard, but I also don't want that to be the time that it decides to update my calendar or Gmail or whatever. Because, you know, all those little things matter. They're all little things, but if you want to get better, you have to start trying more of those little things to improve the quality. But there's still a lot of black magic to it, you know, as you know. I don't know what the perfect, do you do AAC recordings? Like at what bit rate? I mean, I'm way over the bit rate that I need to put out a 64K mono podcast. But, you know, and then eventually you learn stuff like, was it Levelator? Like, Levelator makes things sound weird to my ears. Almost everybody I know uses Levelator to, I guess, normalize the tracks. I use GarageBand, and I have these stock settings I've set up once that I probably should improve. But, I've got stock settings for gate and equalization. You know, John and I have such different timbre voices. And I've tried to get it to where it's loud enough but won't distort. So anyway, all of that stuff is, you have to experiment with it. But then what's nice is, kind of once you get it where you want it to be, it's, you know, it just goes. Except for Skype, which is always, Skype is like a roulette table. You just never know what'll happen. Oh, I see. You've changed my input. Oh, I see. You've moved my sound all the way down to where there's no volume on the mic. Yeah. Thank you, Skype.
Which is, it's the fun part of doing this show where I'm obviously talking to other podcasters. And invariably, like,
you're gonna troubleshoot them.
It's just like we're gonna have issues. We all know it, and we all spend the first 5 minutes swearing about Skype, and then
I've been on shows where like people perceive themselves as like, well, you know, we're just a big shot operation, and they'll have this guy, his assistant, sent me this 2-page thing about how to record a podcast. And on the one hand, just because I'm self-involved, I was like, you know what, your boss is having me on because I do this for a living, but you know. That's fine. But then on the other hand, the funny part of that is that most of the people who got that 2-page sheet would either not read it or not understand it. It's one of those, like, please don't let your dog poop here kind of signs. Where I wonder how you know, efficable it is.
Yeah.
But so the amazing thing about Skype, or the frustrating thing about Skype, and Dan's talked about this a lot of places. Dan's experimented with a lot of things, and you know, I've experimented with a few things. I've never found a better protocol. In Skype. I don't understand how Skype does what it does. It is like magic. The problem is with the app, in my experience. I'm using a very old version of Skype that is far from perfect, but it's far less imperfect than every version I've used since. So I use that. No, and then you got to mention Ecamm's call recorder is a terrific way to record your calls, and you can put in markers. But do you record straight into Logic?
I do, yeah. I've said on the show a few times, I was the dumb one who got suckered into the... not really, but following the Dan and the Leos and the getting into it, I think when mixers and all that kind of stuff was like, I need to do that because that's what you do and that's what the big people do. So Sue, my wife, can stop listening right now. I spent, you know, way too much money on this mixer. I have the Mac Mini you're talking, you know, and I've actually I can do that. It's my show. Episode 15
show.
Of this show, if you go back,
I will
Tim Smith
right
interviewed
now.
Me to sort of talk about all the gear, and he walked me through what I do, because you know it's hard to sort of just talk about it yourself. So so I do that, but in hindsight, because it was that classic thing of and not to say that I won't ever get there, but it was I'm gonna do do the podcast network, and I'm going to be interviewing and having this big discussion show. And in two months later, I'll have the Leo Laporte Skype monster wall thing behind me, and everybody's going to love it. And then my mom falls asleep during listening to a podcast, and there we go, off to the races. But yeah, it's,
I got a really nice Mackie mixer. If you want to, I is so covered with dust. I bought that. I forget. It's the one that Jesse Thorne, I guess, either used or he definitely recommended. I've got this Shure mic with a big fuzzy thing on it. And I bought a boom that I never installed. I bought an analog compressor. I bought all of this stuff. And this is how dumb I am, Chris. I set all of that stuff up and spent 2 days trying to tweak it. And it sounded way better when I plugged in my Rode Podcaster again. Because sure, I guess I could do all that and set it all up. But right now, I with one hand, I grab this boom, which has my mic and my headphones. My headphones are hung on it. I grab that, I stick it on my desk, I plug something in, make sure the audio is all correct. And, you know, boy, that's the kind of thing that would make Dan Benjamin shudder. We recorded this live show at the Macworld studio Tuesday, and he spent like 45 minutes, like just like he couldn't stop because he's Dan. He kept going on and on about like, oh, they need this and they don't have that. And then I thought it sounded fine.
It did.
I mean, maybe I played in too many rock bands, but, you know, for people, but I understand that. I understand wanting your tools a certain way. I understand, like in my case, wanting to have Quicksilver and Text Expander. And for me to go to somebody's, it's the same thing, right? If I go to somebody's computer or their Mac and they didn't have Text Expander and Quicksilver, I'd be like, what's wrong with you? Don't you know how to use this?
Yeah. That's actually we're reaching the that point, but.
Remember when we joked about it being 2 hours long? Ha, ha, ha.
I just got a text from my wife saying they're still at McDonald's with the kids, so there won't be any McDonald's noise. I hate McDonald's. The pee on the slide.
Because they don't have, the ball pit. They probably don't have good protein.
We don't have ball pits anymore, but actually I can lay claim. I can say this on this episode, and lots of people will listen probably, that my son is actually one of the kids who has peed on the slide at McDonald's.
So that's good for him. Yeah,
I mean, that's something we'll write in his yearbook or...
You gotta know who you are. You know what I mean?
Who you is or was.
And it goes right down. Right? I mean, it goes, you know, gravity. Yeah.
Well, so. The best part was his friend, our friend's kid, followed him down the slide.
Oh, no. Secondhand pee is no fun.
And you feel bad, but what can you do?
And then you leave, right? That's not very Canadian to do that.
No, my wife apologized. She said, she told the worker there and the person there and employee and...
Ma'am, this is the first time anything like this has ever happened.
Well, that's a whole other story, but I don't know if the employee understood what she was saying, and so there's a very good chance that I don't know how often those things get cleaned. So we don't go on the slide anymore. Suffice to say. How is it meeting Dan in person? And whether it's Dan, but in your case it's Dan, but somebody and now doing the show afterwards, like does it change the show? Does it feel weird? Is it just the same?
You know, I don't think it will. It was very, very strange to meet him. It's so odd to, I kept saying to Dan, it reminds me of, I'm trying to think of a good example. Play It Again, Sam comes to mind, where Woody Allen's character is visited by Humphrey Bogart years after he's been dead. It really almost felt like I was talking to Benjamin Franklin or something, but like somebody who I was so familiar with, right? I mean, thousands and thousands of words that we've exchanged over the years, including emails and stuff before he was doing podcasts, that I knew of or listened to. It's just strange to have somebody in your life that is a kind of business colleague and friend that you've never met. I've heard this story a million times, you know, people who get engaged and have happy marriages with people that they've met on the internet. But it always seems strange when it happens to you. So yeah, it was weird. He's pretty much, not exactly, but a lot like what I thought he would be, which is, you know, delightful and very funny and very fast, very slender and handsome. But it was absolutely very strange. Yeah. Yeah. I saw, Scott and Adam a couple nights ago. We did a little thing. Scott was doing some stand up at John Gruber's talk show thing, and we did a little bit, and yeah, it's strange. I mean, you get older and like, you know, when you see your friends again, it's almost like nothing has changed in some ways. Like everybody's heavier and grayer, but not that much has changed. But I still think it's weird. I still feel like I'm meeting absolute celebrities. Like when I, like meeting iMike, you know, Mike Hurley the other night, meeting, two of the most famous jackals from the 5x5 chat room, where I was like, oh my God, I so know you, and yet I don't know you. This is weird. I met Dented Meat. I met, you know, it's just really weird. But And that kind of answers your question. Yeah. I mean, it was weird to meet Dan. I don't think anything will change. I mean, it's, I think we've got a pretty established thing that we do. And I agree with you. It's, I think that is a compliment that it sounds like we're in the same room. And I think the episode wasn't all that, apart from the references to how Dan kept staring at me in a creepy way. I think it was pretty much like any other Inscrutable episode of the show.
Yeah. That's, I tweeted to you and Dan after I listened and just that it, I think it's to, again, to your credit and Dan's, the chemistry that you guys have, that it didn't, wasn't awkward, it wasn't weird, wasn't anything all that different. And yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
Well,
we're probably out of time. Oh,
yeah, we were out of time a long time ago. I got all day. I'll do a little sponsor break for my buddy here. And, while I'm doing that, why don't you get your podcast list queued up and then we'll wrap up in the second hour.
Bet. It's a good idea.
So I'd just like to thank Aaron Dowd for helping with the production of this episode. He's a huge Merlin Mann fan as well. And you may have heard him on episode 18 of this show if you listened back then. And, he did the post-production on that episode, and he's going to do it on this episode as well. So if you're looking to hire somebody to help out with post-production editing, any sort of fun stuff on the audio side of your podcast, hit up Aaron Dowd over at aarondowd.com. And so thanks to him for sponsoring this episode. I don't know if that was enough vamping for you to...
I'm sorry, I did literally just run over and get my phone, so I hope I didn't miss anything important.
No, we're good. So, podcast you listen to?
Yeah, looks like you're an Instacast man too. What do I listen to? I'm just looking at Instacast right now. I'll tell you the ones I really look forward to. Obviously I got a Huff Duffer that I swear by.
Yeah, I'll throw a link.
I just can't say enough great stuff about it. Okay, yeah. Terrific. That's one I love a lot. The Incomparable. Hosted by Jason Snell and a rotating crew. They talk about things like movies and comics and books. And you know, a lot of science fiction, fantasy, you know, Doctor Who, Star Wars. They played D&D on the air one time. It's actually not as ridiculously nerdy than it sounds.
That's what I was going to say. It's like when you describe it that way to somebody, they picture, you know, the stereotypical nerds in the basement eating.
Yeah, but that's actually a terrific example. But if you're listening to Serenity Caldwell, Dan Morin, John Siracusa, and Andy Anatko talk about those things, well, yeah, then that becomes kind of interesting because you may know their voices. In the case of Dan and Ren, you know their writing from Macworld. Ditto Jason Snell. And I think it's terrific. I've been on two episodes of the show. One was talking about a Marvel comic called House of M. And then last week I was on the show about My Neighbor Totoro. And it's just a show. It's really a show that I look forward to. I was honored to get to be on because I'm such a mega fan. If you want a place to start, I've said this other places, but if you want a place to start with The Incomparable, I recommend their two-part episode on Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, which I've listened to so many times because it's so freaking funny. If you're a kindred spirit, yeah, as I and they are on the quality of that film and the expectations that were so Jar Jar'd when it came
that's
out.
That's a question I'd sort of put, you know, to random friends and stuff. I said, you know, so I'm talking to Merlin Thursday, anything you, what would you want to know or what would you ask him or whatever, those kinds of things. And that's what one friend said. She's like, ask him about Phantom Menace.
Well, I'm very, very honored to say I've become pals with Mike Nichols, otherwise known as the Phantom Editor.
Right.
And we had an unintentional mutual admiration society, and we become kind of, we haven't met yet, but you know, we have phone calls and, you know, exchange thoughts. And what he did with both the Phantom Menace and the second one is amazing. What's the second one called? Anyway, the really, really bad one that's almost as bad. But he's got a great DVD commentary. If you're interested in Star Wars stuff, go back. I think it's called Attack of the Phantom. And he's got a wonderful DVD commentary track I can recommend. So here's a few more. I'm kind of a little bit on the fence about this, but I think it's definitely worth recommending to try out is Jeff Garlin's podcast, by the way. Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm and stuff. The big guy, he's the captain in WALL-E.
Right, you know? Okay, yeah.
Sup to a centennial cupcake in a cup. I saw him do a live thing with Rob Corddry and Michael Ian Black that was a riot. He's a very funny guy. Anyway, and he interviews comics like Tig Notaro. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. This week's Judd Apatow. Conan O'Brien, Zach Galifianakis, very funny episode. Does it live at Largo in LA. I like XNL Tech Podcast with Casey Marco and John Siracusa. I like Moises's podcast. I listen to Giant Size and Screen Time. I like those. Depends a little bit on who he's interviewing, like a lot of shows. Listen to Mac Power Users. Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. And then, you know, again, some public radio stuff. I never miss On the Media, which is a great podcast, comes out on like Friday afternoons here. I listen to every second of Radio Lab, In This American Life, the obvious ones. What else? Oh, I listen to Brett Terpstra's Systematic. But then, I mean, so that's ones that I listen to every episode of, but you know, if you go look at my Huffduffer, you'll see links to my stuff that I've put up, you know, but you'll also see all the stuff where I'm kind of giving it a little, taste or a try. You know, I heard Chris Hardwick mentioned me on his show. So I listened to that. I like Chris a lot. I don't listen to every episode of his show, but I love Chris Hardwick very, very much. He's a good pal. So yeah, that Huffduffer is, enough said about Huffduffer, but to me, that's really interesting because if you want to really find out what someone's listening to, that's a great way to peek in and get a viewport into what's catching someone's interest right now.
Yeah, that's why I want more people to start using it because I want to find out what people in a non-creeper way.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Hear what they're listening to and all that kind of stuff. So, and you're an incomparable Instacast listener, right? App user as far as what you use.
Yeah, I've tried a bunch of different ones, but Instacast, I'm interested to see what evolves with the Mac app. It's, you know, I'm fine with iTunes to just listen. I don't do any syncing. iCloud syncing on Instacast was a disaster for me. So I just listen on my iPhone. That's the one place. Let me put that differently. I have podcasts that I subscribe to on my desktop, my Mac Pro, that I will listen to like while I'm at work. But I spend so much of the day with these painful earbuds in, and they're very poorly made, but I like them a lot. They're made by, who makes my earbuds? I buy a pair like every 2 months. Oh my gosh, I'm having such a brain fart. Anyway, I on the phone, I always listen in Instacast, and then on my Mac, I always listen in iTunes. And I've, something I learned about from Brett Terpstra, something called Better Touch Tool, where you can assign custom commands to things. So I've got things like, I've got custom, you know, in Instacast, you can go back 30 seconds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yep, you know I'm talking about? I wish every app was that way. So yeah, I have custom key commands where I can jump back and forward 30 seconds on a podcast. Right. Great way. Like if you're getting to a point that's obviously going to be about something you're not that interested in, you just go tap, 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 tap and go forward a little bit. I wish every app had that.
So you should, I don't know if you gave it a spin, but Instacast for Mac actually came out.
I don't know. I got it the day it came out. I grabbed it and I was like, No. And you know, I love Instacast. It's just, it feels like a little bit of an island.
Yeah.
And it's still very young, so I'll wait and see, but I don't know. There's some kinds of, I think people use the phrase third party wrong a lot of the time. I think they often mean second party. it's not an Apple app. It's not an Apple app. There's no third party involved, right. I guess. Maybe I'm the third party. I don't understand what that means, but, you know, where possible, I'll run an Apple app. Yeah. But then there's a bunch of stuff that I couldn't live without on my Mac and my iPhone. But yeah, that's what I do. And you know, I don't make any giant attempt to keep up with things. I will frequently go through my Huffduffer thing and go, oh well, you know, I'll just I don't really need to have that on here. I don't want it staring at me. You know, slide right. No, it's great. And podcasts are a great source of joy for me. It's difficult if I'm doing anything approaching real work, whether that's writing or especially audio. I can't listen to them, so I listen to music. But yeah, a lot of my day, that's my only friend, is podcast. Yeah.
And I'd be remiss as a Canadian and a CBC listener to not ask you about, I think, I don't know if you've recently been on, but I know at various points you've been on CBC Spark.
Oh, with Nora. Young. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah, so just...
Nora Young, yeah, right? Yeah. She's so charming.
Is that, how did that come about? Is that just because, you know, you're a tech pundit?
Because I'm a pundit. No, they're, I want to say Dan Meisner, I believe was his name, is a producer there. Fantastic guy that had me on a few episodes and we did a little series one time. I don't think it's anywhere approaching the best stuff I've ever done. It was okay. I think, no, meaning I did okay. Yeah. It wasn't great, but it was a real honor to do. I've got a CBC shirt, you know, with the pizza on, the exploding pizza on it. Nice. I'm a fan, but yeah. And I used to have three Sloan shirts, but then I had to get rid of a bunch of t-shirts, but Yeah, no, that was really cool. It's really weird to be on like a real thing. It's very odd. Yeah. I have to heavily modulate my thing for something where it's going to be cut up into a short thing. It's very odd.
Yeah, that would be weird to hear.
I believe you remember that. Wow.
Well,
that
was a long time ago. I did remember, but then actually I was speaking of other people. I was talking with my brother-in-law yesterday and he had, you know, it's one of the, again, I wasn't aware that he was aware of you in his world, but it was through Spark. He had said he'd heard of you and then he subsequently followed you on Twitter and stuff like that. So,
wow, that's so bananas. Tell him I said hi. That's super nice. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's probably enough for folks to digest.
Should probably take a bio break and come back for another couple hours.
I gotta pee.
I appreciate you having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it has. And I've loved it. And I really appreciate you putting aside the nearly 2 hours now that we've done to chat. And maybe for episode 40 or episode 200, whatever, some future episode, we'll have you back on. And
when, no question. Have me back any time.
Launched your secret new project or whatever ends up happening.
Yeah, if you find out what it is, okay. Let me know.
So where can folks, if they're not completely aware, where can folks find you, follow you?
I would just say, podcast-wise, just go listen to Back to Work. It's pretty good. You know, which is 5x5.tv/B2W. And I really, really love Roderick on the Line, which you can get to easily by going to RoderickOnTheLine.com. That's plenty. That's fine. I'm in other places. Don't follow me on Twitter. But I'm out there in other places. You can find me.
What episode of Roderick would you say is a, besides the obvious?
Oh, that's a, which one do you think of?
Super Saiyan? But I was going to say like episode one, I guess, besides just starting at the beginning.
Episode one's important. Keep moving and get out of the way.
Episode zero, I'm trying to think of vomit, but
recent. Yeah, it's true. What are some really good ones? Campfire Spaghetti Party's pretty. I'm trying to look for a recent one. Campfire Spaghetti Party's pretty good. There's one we did recently that was really funny, I thought. Ketchup is Hard to Remove. Yes, Ketchup is Hard to Remove from a few weeks ago was pretty funny. And also Diddling as the MacGuffin was pretty good too. They're all pretty good. I mean, the canonical episodes are, I think, Super Train, Dead Rubber Girl in my closet is, I think that's where we started to really turn a corner. In the same way that like talking about, you know, Estelle Getty having dementia on You Look Nice Today, I think that's where things and you know, her being a traveling barber where Morgan Freeman would play her testicles. That I felt like we really turned a corner on that one.
This will be the episode I'll send to my mom to start with.
Oh, that's so sweet. Please tell her I said hi.
All right. And if you can't get a testicle joke in there somewhere, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
So my thanks to Merlin. My thanks to you folks for listening. Of course, I'm on Twitter, iChris. And if you found this somehow, somewhere, Huffduffer, maybe iTunes, some sort of weird search, you came across this episode. You can find more episodes like this at ssktn.com. Show Me Your Mic is the name of the show. Of course, sskTN on Twitter and the Facebooks and stuff. My thanks for listening and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Show Me Your Mic on the SSKTN Podcast Network. Follow along on Twitter at SSKTN or like us on Facebook.com/SSKTN. Be sure to visit SSKTN.com for interviews with other podcasters, as well as learn about other shows we produce, such as Welcome to the Internet, Too Lazy to Blog, and Lost in Lemon.